lost everything. Until that dog arrived on my doorstep. A final gift for my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve on alone. And your son took that from me.
Hakon stole that from me. Killed that from me! People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Welcome to the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast. Look at the entire John Wick franchise.
Bonjour, Monsieur Wick, and welcome to La Resistance.
Join Garrett.
Well, your little act of uncivil disobedience inspired me, John. I'm branching out, spreading my wings.
Matt.
You working again?
No, just sorting some stuff out.
And Adam.
This life follows you.
As they earn their coins by reviewing each film of the Keanu Reeves starring franchise, leading up to a review of Ballerina, released by Lionsgate Films earlier this year.
30 paces. In the event that both parties survive, each will approach the other at increments of 10 paces until only one remains.
So unholster your ears in these confines, percolated media listeners.
I'm not asking you to kill anyone.
The Percolated Media John Wick Retrospective begins now.
If you would be so kind as to follow me.
Ballerina, released June 6, 2025. Budget was $90 million. Box office, at the time of recording, although it seems like it'll be the end of this movie's release, $132 million. And this was directed by Len Wiseman. Or was it? We will discuss. Man alive, guys. We started this John Wick series with the intention of ending it with this one, and here we have it. Ana de Armas going in a parallel universe of John Wick between 3 and 4. Matt, coming into this, what the hell were you expecting?
Where do I begin? I jokingly referred to this as John Woke when this retrospective started, and I kind of said that callously. That's not how I feel personally, but there is a trend in modern movies that we have to talk about, and that is the what has been referred to by someone that I follow on YouTube as girl boss movies. And this trend really starts, I guess you can argue that Rey and the Star Wars movie, the Disney Star Wars films, was the first notable example of this, of the quote-unquote strong female character taking over a predominantly male-led franchise, and it's permeated throughout various, basically every modern franchise that's been around. Marvel, there's numerous examples of that. Most of them have not worked, both critically or with audiences for that matter. Star Trek has done it. The Rings of Power, I would say, is the most infamous, because the Tolkien fans were very up in arms. And I wasn't surprised that it found its way here. Because, look, No Time to Die, there was an argument about that as well with the new 007 that took over, which ironically has Ana de Armas in it. So that's a weird coincidence. And not even just Marvel. Look at Disney in general. Star Wars, it wasn't just Rey. Because I don't want to turn this into a political discussion, but there is a very strong group of people who are tired of this trope. And it's not just a vocal minority, despite what people would lead you to believe. I think there is merit to arguing that it hasn't been done well in the decade plus. So I wasn't surprised it was doing it here, because I think the obvious comparison, Garrett, ironically, 1 year later, this is a Furiosa situation. And a lot of connections, because you have a franchise that was male-driven, focused on the titular character, that they gave a spinoff to another female lead that has some interconnectedness to the franchise as the whole. Both got good critical reception, all things considered. They didn't have a lot of controversy as far as that girl boss type of backlash, but neither movie's performed. So I'll get off my soapbox for now, but that's kind of why I wasn't
particularly excited for this because I didn't want to have another Civil War talking about gender politics in movies. It's gotten exhausting, and you know, it's a discussion worth having, but it's been so, I think, one-sided that it's ruined a lot of my anticipation for things that I normally would have more excitement for.
Amazing that you mentioned Furiosa. I got a lot of Furiosa flashbacks while this thing was on. All right, Adam, while we wait for Matt to climb off his soapbox, what were you thinking this was going to be about, this ballerina, this offshoot of John Wick?
I felt like this was going to be like so many that we've seen, not necessarily, you know, female driven. That doesn't bug me. I wish we had more female action movies. I just wish we had good ones. I just felt like it was going to be that little side quest story type of thing. And I'll be honest, I wasn't looking forward to it very much. And the reason I wasn't was because of three words: Ana de Armas.
Wow.
She was probably the reason I was looking forward to it the least. Look, I love Knives Out. If we ever get to that, potential spoiler, I fucking love Knives Out, and I think she is astounding in it.
Wow, we got to stop the press, Garrett. Adam likes a Rian Johnson movie.
Ironically, I've never seen it.
It's funny that his sequel, much like before, just can't hold up. But like No Time to Die, she was, as we discussed then, she was perfectly in it for the little bit she was there. The Gray Man, which is a Netflix movie, kind of same thing. But I lasted 15 minutes in Blonde, and I wanted a refund on 15 years of Netflix subscription. That thing is so bad. And I don't find her captivating. I don't think she's a very good actress. I don't think she can hold a movie as a individual. She's not a headliner. Look, she's perfectly capable with other people as part of an ensemble. But to me, that's just, I don't know. It's like pulling just a mid-card, you know, wrestler and deciding that they're going to headline, maybe not WrestleMania, but Royal Rumble. You know, it's like, oof, you know what? No, you need to be in the big match, not the main event.
Ana de Armas, this is actually the third time she has starred with Keanu Reeves in a film, which is very interesting. This will be the second time she has taken him on, the first time being one of the worst movies of all time, Knock Knock.
Literally taking him on.
Yeah, no shit.
Taking him in.
Before we get to that, and before we get to the director controversy, because boy, there's a lot to fucking unpack with that, I have teased this screenwriter, this Shay Hatton. This guy has come onto this series, pretty much taken it over from the original writer, Derek Kolstad, who's gone on to do the Nobody, Mr. Nobody. What the hell is the name of that thing with?
I think it's just called Nobody.
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 Yeah, he's gone on to that with David Leitch. And this guy, what an interesting early career this guy has. He's only in like his mid-20s. And he started off as an underling of Shane Black's. He pretty much got Shane Black coffee. He worked for Robert Downey Jr.'s production company. He worked on scripts for him. And this guy wrote a script that, Jesus Christ, I don't see there's any way this thing gets made. But the only reason I know about this script is because, well, the three of us are covering Stephen King's filmography. You know where I'm going with this.
And, yeah, I...
And these guys talked about a script that Shay Hatton wrote called Maximum King. What this script is pretty much the story of Stephen King making Maximum Overdrive. And if you go back to our review of that, I talked about the fact that he was pretty much coked out of his mind the entire time he was on that set. Things of him walking down the highway and blowing his nose and white powder coming out. Stuff like that. I don't see there's any way this thing gets made. Matt, have you read this thing?
I know of its existence, which is why I was giggling as you led into it. I don't think there's a chance it gets made because King would have several publicists murdered.
Yes.
But he would hire hitmen to hide in sewer drains and lure them in like Pennywise with the promises of getting films made. But it's the kind of movie that I would really like to see. It kind of sounds like what The Disaster Artist was, which I think if that movie didn't get made around the same time that this script was written, maybe it would have seen the light of day. But that's the kind of movie I think Shane Black would actually be perfect to make if he wanted to direct it and the script got made. The problem is, who do you cast to play Stephen King?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that'd be quite the prosthetic job if you can't find someone who looks like him. But I don't think there's a chance in hell that gets made. But what did he do instead? He pitched his wagon to Zack Snyder, which that's like signing your own death warrant at this point, because everything he has made recently, that Army of the Dead movie, which I had high hopes for, was garbage. And then Rebel Moon took every ounce of my Like, I had to put on my own Green Lantern ring and channel my willpower to try to get through both of those movies. They are interminable garbage that rival Sucker Punch as the worst things he's ever made.
Yeah. What was the name of the zombie movie? Army of the Dead?
Army of the Dead, which okay. goes Army to show how important James Gunn was to Dawn of the Dead. Because you see a zombie movie that he did, not written by James Gunn.
2.5 hours, and that thing dragged. Now, I got maybe 30 minutes into Rebel Moon, and it wasn't necessarily that I wasn't into it, but I had to turn it off for some reason. I think, you know, maybe me and Jen were going somewhere or something, and I was just like, I'll just watch this later, and I never picked it back up. Adam, what do you feel about this guy hitching on to Zack Snyder and writing those three films? Have you seen those movies?
So I also, much like you, I had to turn off Rebel Moon. And the reason is because I had zombie walked into my kitchen and grabbed a knife. And if I didn't turn it off, I might not be here to have this discussion. There is not a worse movie I think I've seen. Like, I have not finished it. It looks horrible. The haircut. The fucking haircut, okay? Guy Gardner is a joke with his haircut. Zack Snyder thinks it's a fucking tribute. So he cast some of the worst actors. He got Chick from The Mummy, which, oh my God, like, to be your star, it looks bad. It is shot bad. The slow-mo to fast, oh, God damn it. You know what? Rick and Morty did a spoof last week or 2 weeks ago with James Gunn and Zack Snyder, and they nailed Zack Snyder to the fucking letter. That's all I'm going to say. But I will never go back and watch those. So I've clearly not finished them.
Well, it's safe to assume.
And they're so long. They're so goddamn long.
And he did a director's cut of each. Of course he did. He put out a fucking 3-hour version after doing his 2-hour version. And these were Netflix movies.
Well, it's safe to assume that if he hadn't wrote this spec script that we talked about last week, that eventually got woven into the John Wick universe, Shay Hatton would probably still be working for Zack Snyder, but I don't know if Zack Snyder is going to be working much longer, given the shit that he's put out. All right, so that's the screenwriter. Let's get into the directing of this. When this thing was announced, I think it was 2023, maybe 2022, around there.
It was right after the fourth one came out.
Right after the fourth one, so 2023. They announced Len Wiseman was the director of this. And him and Chad Stahelski were going around, and Stahelski was like, yep, I'm going to turn it over to this guy. I trust him. I think he's going to do good things with this. Now, before I get to what happened, Matt, you are a noted unfan of Len Wiseman. What did you think when you heard that announcement?
That's like, I hate his sensibilities as a filmmaker. I think his films are so slick that they might as well be made of Teflon. And we've seen him take over. His Die Hard movie is the complete antithesis of what the first Die Hard film stood for. And I'll leave it at that, because we'll probably be reviewing that series in a couple of years. And I thought his Total Recall, I gave it every opportunity because I looked at it as another adaptation of the story. And it started out as that, and then it turned into, oh, we got to reference every single thing in the Verhoeven movie. And I don't know whose call that was, but I also think it's very blandly shot from an action standpoint. And part of the appeal of the John Wick franchise, in fact, the largest appeal for me, is the choreography and the gunplay. And nothing I've seen in his movies, even the first Underworld, which I think is lovable trash in the same way that something like Van Helsing is. But those movies get worse and worse, and I know he didn't direct all of them, but I don't think anything in his action filmmaking is on par with what I've seen from Stahelski and David Leitch, because, you know, Leitch has gone on to do other things, but you can still tell he's got that style that he really acquired from the Wick series. And this just felt like a director for hire job, which that's not what I want from this franchise, because they really felt like labors of love, and I didn't want this to become commercialized. Because the thing you could say about Furiosa in its favor, now Garrett and I both really liked it. In fact, Garrett liked it more than I did, which was a shock. George Miller still directed it at his age, which is impressive in and of itself. This is not that level of confidence, so I was not a fan. No, no, sir, I don't like it.
There's talk that Chad Stahelski actually directed this, but
oh god, yeah.
Let me get to Adam first. Adam, you actually like Len Wiseman, don't you?
I did. I like the first Underworld. I like the third Underworld. So in for what they are, to Matt's point, they're exactly like Van Helsing to me. They're it is that nerd's rope when I want something fruit, you know, just ooey gooey goodness. You know, I can have fun with it. I appreciate and like that he brought some, I thought, really cool horror style TV shows, you know, that he was a big part of, things like Sleepy Hollow, Swamp Thing, which was astounding. So I like that stuff. As a director, he is the Kate Beckinsale of directing. Some of his stuff is pretty to look at, and it is hollow and vapid. So that's kind of where I am with Len Wiseman. It's amazing that this is the film that brought him back to directing a film after being out of the game for a decade.
So this thing's in production, and it's going a little slow, but we're still on track for a 2024 release. And then Ian McShane opens his big yap, saying, well, Chaz Stahelski is actually coming on, and he's going to be shooting some scenes to, quote-unquote, save the franchise. Now, that does not give a lot of vote of confidence into this guy who, Matt said it, I was going to save it till the end, but this is a director for hire. I mean, there's no question about it. Len Wiseman had no connection to the series until he was hired for this thing. And here you have one of your stars coming out saying it needs to be put back on track. Look, as somebody who has worked in Hollywood, I know, hell, even on any independent film, you do pickups, no matter what. But supposedly, this seems like it's almost a poltergeist thing where he didn't just shoot pickups. He shot all new scenes, and they had to get the band back together, as they say, and shoot completely new scenes to tie everything together. Matt, what were you thinking when you heard that?
Speaking of Zack Snyder, I was having Justice League.
No PTSD. Shit.
Because it's almost that level of overhaul without publicly firing the previous director.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a thing of, you know, Ian McShane kind of pulled a Jeremy Irons talking about the quality dip. So this was not selling me on anything. And you could tell they were playing damage control, because I'll put this theory out there in the same way that Darth Vader in Rogue One felt like a last minute gut punch reaction. I don't believe John Wick was ever intended to be in this movie.
Luckily for me, I didn't hear any of them till after I saw the movie. When I heard them, and then I went back and read McShane's interview comments, it made some sense. But that being leaked ahead of time, which I found out, I'm sure did not contribute positively to the lack of success for this film. It's, I mean, McShane's not, he's a part of this, but he's not the star. So for him to be the one with the balls, because there's no way Darmus can say that kind of thing. She's a female in Hollywood, like, it's unfair, but she would never be allowed to speak out against it. McShane probably saved some respectability in trying to explain why this thing was Frankenstein together as it is.
Len Wiseman and Chaz Stahelski both were out in the press saying, no, that's not true. But at the same time, you watch this movie, there is... I'll talk about differences, but there's no way that Stahelski did not shoot at least a quarter of this film.
And I appreciate and admire Stahelski for staying silent on it, because this franchise has been his baby. Mm-hmm. And he could easily have said, look, he went on to do some other things. I had to come in with some touch. He's not saying that he touched up anything, and it's clear he did. So I got to say, I admire him in a industry that doesn't have a whole lot of love for loyalty anymore.
What else? Especially with something like this, which has become, we'll talk about this momentarily, it has become a franchise as far as not just one spinoff, but it's permeated its way outside of strictly film.
What I'll also say is it led me to really have some hesitation going in, because after the fourth film, which all three of us praised a lot, this thing was riding a high wave, and there has never been any reports. I mean, of course, you know, you watch the documentary that they did, Wick is Pain, and every one of these films was difficult as hell to make. However, you never heard behind-the-scenes drama like this. You never heard about a film being pretty much taken out of a director's hands. Because as Adam mentioned, Chaz Stahelski was the spearhead for this thing. This is his baby. David Leitch left. It's his. You know, you had the other director, Basil, I cannot remember his last name for the life of me, but those are the three people, and Keanu, who have held this thing together. And when that thing is fractured, when that band is fractured, it does not lend itself to me coming in a positive light and thinking that this movie will be as good as I was hoping. Now, Matt, you touched on it. Adam, you haven't seen it. Last year, they did a spinoff series on Peacock called The Continental, which me and Jen went through. There's only 4 episodes. They are all hour and a half long. I really liked it. I rewatched it in the lead up to this. It's not up to quality, but here's the thing. After the fourth movie, you could do nothing but dip down, especially when you go to TV.
Well, I'll rebel against that last part because we've seen franchise redemption on television and quality in a way that we have not seen from franchises on the big screen. The example I use is Star Wars. I look at something like Andor. Yeah, I know. Shut your mouth. And I think that is head and shoulders above anything Disney has done with the movies. And I say that as someone who loves The Last Jedi. That felt more cinematic and grandiose. Now, they have the advantage of four times the real estate, but they redeemed a property and an installment that I thought was DOA. So I don't think using TV, I don't handicap properties for going on TV anymore. So I thought it was broadly fine. The guy who played Ian McShane's character did a decent impression of him. Spoilers, 3, 2, 1. I don't like the reveal that Mel Gibson is Lance Reddick's biological father. Yeah. I thought that was stupid.
Yeah. That was dumb.
But it was okay for what it was.
But at the same time, you're seeing a dip in quality, and that just did not lend itself to me thinking this was going to be good. All right, so we start off with a shot of a snow globe and a bloody little girl holding it. We then cut to her dad, named Javier, dancing with her and telling her she looks so much like her sister. Now, this opening scene, this whole thing that we're going to see, the death of the father and whatnot, it was in the script, but they were not going to shoot it. Here comes Chad Stahelski. He comes in. Guess what? They have the money. They go ahead and shoot it. This whole opening prologue is, I believe, I don't know for sure, but I believe this is all Chad Stahelski things because I definitely see a lot of Wick here.
Right away, I can tell this is a clash of styles because this opening stylistically is a lot closer to John Wick. Not with the action because that's a given, but the visuals and the sheen that's on it and even the way certain characters are introduced, like the big like villain walk in. It's framed a lot like how John Wick was introduced in the second movie. So I lead a lot more favoritism in the belief that this is all Stahelski. And I got annoyed at the frickin' snow globe because all I could think of was frickin' Batman and Robin. That's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing to think of.
Right away, it starts out, and I'm like, ooh, this is kind of cool. I don't know why we got Navy SEALs showing up with little, like, silencer mini, you know, crossbows and shit. But okay, kind of cool. And then I know very clearly that I am in a B-list John Wick movie. I know that Stahelski did this. Looked that up. Very clear on it. But you know what's also very obvious? They did not have the time, the money, nor the effort to spend the practice and the choreography like we normally do. There are some camera tricks that I loathe that happens throughout this film, and they start right here. We discussed Zack Snyder earlier. Stop speeding up and slowing down your fucking camera, because I get pissed every time they speed up the camera to make some of this action look, you know, a little more impactful. That doesn't happen in any other John Wick movie, so you do it here, and I'm immediately crossing my arms. I don't think it looks very good. I think it's a little muddied, and I think that's because this is done on the cheap to add something Stahelski wanted from the original script. I gotta say, you should have left this unfilmed, because I can't stand this opening, and I don't need it.
Well, it's also got the problem of the father is more interesting and dynamic a performer than Ana de Armas is.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
With a little time he's here, and this is the guy from the Umbrella Academy, which is why I recognized him right away. Kind of wish he was the lead. Yeah, I wish he was the lead, and that's not a good sign.
Before I continue with the film, I do want to mention, and I forgot to talk about this in the beginning, all three of us did see this in the theater. Matt, you saw it before us two. What was your theater like? What was your movie-going experience like? Did you see this alone?
Yeah, I did. Because I wanted to get it in. Because I thought we'd be recording this a lot sooner than we actually are. Yeah. But it was a moderately packed theater for like a midday afternoon, early evening. So it was consistent with what I thought. It wasn't packed, but it wasn't a ghost town.
I went, I believe, the week after. Yeah, we went the week after. Now, Jen really wanted to see this. She's a fan of the John Wick series. It's because of the star. But she likes the series. She was really wanting to see this. So we went a weekend, we went to pizza and then went right to the movie right after. And I text Matt when I got out, and I'll save that text for when we break down our thoughts, because it pretty much sums everything up. So we saw it the second week. Adam, you saw this, what, 3 weeks in?
The week after, yeah. So it would have been the second full weekday, okay. Whatever. It was, but yeah, I think during the week of after 2 weeks of weekend. And when the lights went down and Nicole Kidman started talking to me, it was a private screening.
Nice.
By the time the trailers were done, there was about six people in there. I mean, I'm talking like 11:30 on a Wednesday afternoon. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is, but I think it's pretty clear to say that audiences were not clamoring for this nearly as much. Afterwards, Laura asked me what I went to see. I showed her the trailer and she went, "Ooh, I want to go see that." Of course you do now. Marriage. But even with it being now on digital, we still haven't got around to seeing it. So that's how much it's fun. I guess that's kind of apropos for the way this is being looked at overall by all audiences.
Well, it's also apropos because not only did this feel like a spinoff with not as much effort, but we already kind of saw we've seen the better version of a female John Wick movie with Atomic Blonde. Not just because David Leitch directed that, but the fight scenes in that, I would put up there with the best of the John Wick installments. And I think Charlize Theron is a much more believable action star than Ana de Armas could ever hope to be.
We've had a couple, you know, that they've really tried to do. You know, Red Sparrow, which, not a good movie, but, you know, Jennifer Lawrence has decided that nudity is going to up that contract. So there you go.
They have to sell that piece of shit.
Lucy.
Lucy.
Lucy was before John Wick.
Yeah.
Was it before?
You know, but there's
And Peppermint was before it too, was it or wasn't?
Yeah, but they did, what, 355 recently came out? Charlize Theron is doing The Old Guard for Netflix, which was a really bad comic series, but hey, Netflix is known for buying really bad comic series and putting them onto screen. So it's just, I mean, I think there's a want for this, but I don't know how much of it is, ooh, we want to see pretty girls fight, as opposed to dad bro porn of wishing you were the character.
Matt mentioned it earlier. Furiosa disappointed last year, and I think the thirst for this has kind of gone away. You know, we've seen so many of these stars. You know, you mentioned Red Sparrow with Jennifer Lawrence, and Charlize Theron has done a couple of these. Everybody seems to want to take that Kate Beckinsale route of doing an action film, but once they get done, nobody remembers them. And
you know, the good Furiosa movie? It was Fury Road. That is a Furiosa movie.
Yeah, yeah. And go back to me and Matt's discussion of that with Mick. We actually mentioned that.
Yeah, but like I said, also Atomic Blonde came out the same year as John Wick 2, so it felt like a companion piece, but it also did its own thing with the plot, so it didn't feel like it was just a
knockoff.
A knockoff. And I know certain people kind of rejected it because it's a spy movie, not a straightforward action movie, but if you just type in Atomic Blonde Stairway Fight on YouTube, it's hard not to be impressed. It's really hard not to be impressed.
I watched that movie for the first time a couple years ago, and it is astounding. Maybe one day we'll review that.
I almost kind of wanted to include it with this because it's kind of the... And I'm also kind of done with spinoffs in general because Argyle is the kiss of death for me.
Yeah.
that's like rock bottom. So yeah, like this on principle, if they flat out, like if Stahelski helmed this, no pun intended, I would have had more confidence. But I also can't give them the budget excuse because this was made for over four times the amount that the first John Wick film was made. And you don't get, you know, if you're concerned about not making enough money on this, maybe you should bring back your budget a bit.
All right, so this little girl who we're going to come to know as Eve, she says that she wishes she could remember her sister. Boy, I wonder if this is going to come about later.
Oh, I put this in my mental mental lunchbox for so I could eat it later.
So we're setting a lot of things up here in the first couple of minutes, aren't we?
We are, and to that part, I'm okay with. You know, I just think the opening's taken too long. Like, this movie should be kind of the length of the first John Wick. Guess what? It's not. It's closer to the length of the third. But yeah, at least we're getting some of those breadcrumbs that we're going to get later on. Some of them you'll remember, some of them you'll forget.
We cut to outside the house as soldiers come up out of the water. I do like this imagery, even if it doesn't make any fucking sense. And I also like the arrows going through people. Like, instead of guns, we're going with arrows. So you guys have been knocking this opening, but I think I'm more high on it than both of you. I'm having at least a little bit of fun seeing what they come up with here.
I just think it's broadly fine.
Yeah.
It's competent, but this whole thing of invading a beachside house. We kind of saw that in the first John Wick movie. I mean, he doesn't live directly on the beach, but we've kind of seen the home invasion within this franchise. So they're not even coming up with an original conceit. Now, I know that's hard to do because with action cinema being as prevalent as it's been for the last 30, 40 years, the well is dry as far as originality. But if you're going to do stuff that your franchise has already dipped its toes into, you got to do it better. And I don't feel like this does it.
Like I said, when these guys first show up, I think it's kind of, I really don't understand it, but I think it looks cool.
More people are being taken out as the girl's dad tells her to remember what we learned. And we see a smoke grenade being dropped and soldiers taken out. And Adam, I'm shocked you don't like this scene more, because this girl hiding behind this bookcase, it reminded me of Interstellar.
You know where right away I started to revolt, though, is when we see the dad start to get dressed and he's got the same fucking tattoo on his back.
Yeah, I
rolled so hard that I'm still looking like Forrest Whitaker in the mirror.
Oh my God, Jesus. We didn't see the...
I gotta remember that for future use.
Jesus Christ. Can't wait to review Species. We then see the entrance of Gabriel Byrne, an actor I hadn't seen in so long, I thought he was dead.
I had no clue he was in this.
I didn't either.
I don't think he knew either, because he looks like he's on Prozac or something.
I know.
Throughout this entire movie.
He does. He says they allowed an outsider to marry a daughter of their clan, and now his wife is dead to make him pay for his transgressions.
So we have another principal male character who is being hunted down by a criminal organization because his wife died.
How many times have we seen this fucking plot?
But also, like, okay, so now we've already, in this franchise, we have the Russian mafia, we've had the High Table, we've had the Ruskaroma. Now we have just this cult living out in the Alps that we've never heard of before. I mean, how many criminal splinter organizations can you include in a franchise? And I found this one to be the most absurd of all of them.
I agree.
And you couldn't cast an actor with actual, either an actor who wanted to be there, or when you have a character named the Chancellor, you should have him just eating curtains with the amount of scenery.
Definitely.
That. And you don't get that with Gabriel Byrne. Like I said, he looks like he is perpetually exhausted. Like they just took him out of the nursing home, yelled action. Like if this was the 90s, this should have been played by like Tim Curry.
He does not look like he's having a good time. He really doesn't. So they torture Javier as his daughter looks on, as he says all this posturing makes what he does necessary. He then says that one well-placed bullet can be a magical thing, as how a man uses it reveals his true character. He gives him a choice, and does he have the balls to make the right one is what he asks, as he puts the gun to his head, and Eve calls from the bookcase, and the fight rages on.
I'll say, when we get to this point where he gives him that choice, you know, hey, if you go ahead and kill yourself, we'll let your... I'm down with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do feel a sense of evil that I'm like, okay, well, shit, this is going somewhere a little bit different. But then it just turns into standard as you can get.
Which John Wick has never been. It's never been standard. And no. I definitely have things to say about that once we get to the nightclub later.
Yeah, well, this feels like someone bought the rights to the John Wick series. Yeah. Rather than someone who is actually like an official. This is kind of like the Never Say Never Again of the Wick. It's not that bad. But it kind of feels like it's an unofficial entry, so to speak, even though it's canonical. And they got the fucking main star to come in for some much more than an extended cameo.
It reminded me of when the Sci-Fi Network bought Children of the Corn and we got those films. Like, it's just like, it just looks like it's in different hands. And, oh my God. See a symbol on some wrists. Keep this in mind. As Eve grabs a gun and shoots. Javier says it's okay and they make their way out. More shots ring out as Javier places a bomb and they walk through a blue-tinted house. Bomb goes off and the house blows up real good. Haven't seen this before.
No, but that's how you know this part was shot by Len Wiseman, because of that blue tint.
Yeah, definitely. They're walking on the beach as Javier collapses and apologizes, saying he didn't want this for her. He dies and she's left on the beach. So we cut to Eve with the snow globe, and here comes Ian McShane's Winston. He comes over to pontificate for a bit before telling her that her father was a good man and that he wanted a free, open life for her, and we all live with the decisions that we make. He then says that he will take her to his family, and they will look after her, and one day they can become her family as well.
I love how he pulls the Bruce Wayne card of, I'm going to go talk to a traumatized orphan who just lost their parent, and I'm going to inadvertently brainwash them into a crusade against crime to fit my agenda.
And by the way, Gabriel Byrne isn't the only one phoning it in here. I think M'Shane is too. I just don't think he wants to be here.
I kind of like the thought, because you got to realize it, that Winston's not necessarily a good guy. And yeah, we all like these people, you know, for the, because we have fun with them. But this kind of makes it clear that he's literally recruiting children to go be assassins. And that's pretty fucked up. You know, I like it as a concept, because you have to reevaluate how you think of somebody, you know, and that's how it is.
So Winston takes Eve's hand and they walk. We cut to a theater as Eve is still sitting there with snow globe in hand. As Winston says that the director will see you now, and she's brought before Angelica Houston, who tells her that she is always looking for new recruits.
At least Houston was a professional. It looks like she actually wants to be there.
I agree. The director says that she knows her pain and that she can give her somewhere to let loose of her anger. Eve tells Winston that her path is here with the Ruscaroma, and she thanks him as he gives her a coin.
And that coin says, Eggsy, if you ever need to call me. Brooks, not Brogues.
She then meets Nogi. Is that her name? I guess so. Who says that she knew her father. She says that there are two sides and it is up to her to choose. So all of this is prologue, right? This is all before we actually see Ana de Armas embody this character. How are we feeling about the way this little girl is pretty much being introduced to this world?
It's a trope. It's certainly not original, but look, it's kind of giving me what I wanted from the Black Widow movie.
That's kind of how
this origin was reminding me.
I still haven't
seen down to the abducting kids to be assassins.
Never seen
that. You know, because the opening credits of Black Widow are what the whole movie should have been.
Adam, you seem to be liking it more than us two.
I like this part a little bit. Huge, huge miss to me, because I think it's where this movie should have gone. Is what you realize is that Winston and Angelica Houston, the, I can't remember what they keep calling her in this film,
the director,
they have their own cult. This is a cult. And what they're going up against is a group that just calls themselves the cult, which, Jesus Christ, how fucking lazy, like Hitman,
the organization. I'm like, clearly you guys don't have much brain power when you're coming up with names.
I mean, look, great Batman comic series and amazing band that gets overlooked, but I like the cult. I don't like that as a name in a fucking movie.
You're saying if Gabriel Byrne was if Gabriel Byrne was Deacon Blackfire, you would have been okay with this.
Not a bad, you know what? Tim Burton, get on it.
Please,
but no. I think you could have had that thought process, and this movie's not bothered by thinking that deeply of, yeah, these people are a cult that she goes up against, but that's exactly what Winston has brought her into here, especially as a child to be brought up in this cult. This cult just happens to be done by Angelica Houston.
So what you're saying is, much like behind the scenes, these scenes don't have a real director.
Oh, God, no. And especially, good one. But especially because when you get so much of this here at the Ruscaroma and at the Ballerina School, and what I understand was the reason that they brought this other person in here, Nogi, God, I can't remember how they pronounce it, Nogi, is because Angelica Houston refused to come back for the reshoots. So anytime that Nogi is there, that's all Chad Stahelski filming something new.
We cut to 12 years later as Eve's dancing and trying to master a dance twist and falling Tonya Harding style.
Oh, I was waiting for her to pull a Nancy Kerrigan. But this was giving me like, what was that Aronofsky movie with Natalie Portman?
Black Swan.
That's what I was thinking of with that.
Each fall looks more painful than the last as the director tells her to tend her wounds before they have to cut off her feet. She says that she's pushing herself so she can be ready, and this other girl here, who we're told is the best dancer here, she doesn't figure into the plot as much as I thought she would. This chick just disappears.
Well, this is where I really think there was some lost in translation type of storytelling with the changes, because this is setting you up. Maybe she was intended to be the sister.
I was thinking
not the other character, because why are you putting such an emphasis on her if you're just going to shuffle her off to the side eventually with, you know, little fanfare?
Yeah, this is way too much emphasis given for this character for what they do with her. So there was definitely more there. I swear there's going to be like four different assembly cuts of this film someday.
Yeah, to me, it seems like they did that documentary one movie too early. Like, this is the one you want to document, because I'm like you. I want to know exactly what the fuck happened here, because you're right. The translation here is definitely lost. More training is shown as Eve is just getting her ass kicked, as well as learning to shoot. They didn't enter training where they use simulated rounds, rubber bullets, and she's once again struggling to pass. She's told in order to win, she needs to fight like a girl.
Stop. I like this movie realizes something that's important. Just because they're using rubber bullets doesn't mean they are immune to pain. Mm-hmm. They still hurt, so I appreciate that. So the fight like a girl thing. I think this is a great, because it gets around the problem of the thing that I hate in action movies where you have these 90-pound women taking down guys three times their size. I mean, look, Disney has made an art form out of it between Mulan and Brave New World. Even Scarlett Johansson to a certain degree. They get around it with Wonder Woman because she's a fucking superhero. She's got super strength. But this gets around that of you are not physically equal to men. That's not being misogynistic. It's just a fucking fact.
You're right. But 90 pounds against 300 movie, is definitely a mismatch.
But the movie forgets about this.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, she fights exactly like John Wick. And it's not believable.
Nope.
Because there are parts where she stops an axe from coming at her fucking head full force. And that's not anatomically possible given physics and how she looks. So they're betraying their own premise with this line that should have been the through line of the entire movie.
Not only should it have been the through line, it should have been the tagline on the poster. I roll my eyes a bit. Like, is it important to understand that difference? Yes. But when you literalize it, you just got to go, oh, fuck. Let me guess. We're going to get some kicks in the balls. Yep. Sure are.
The most realistic example of like how a woman would just get physics on her is, if you've ever seen the movie Sicario, where there's the part at the end, spoilers, when Emily Blunt realizes like what's happening, she punches Josh Brolin in the face full force. He reacts to it briefly, but then he easily grabs her arm and throws her on the ground. Not the freaking Brave New World where she does the Japanese arm drag on like 300-pound guys, no problem whatsoever.
All right, so this is when we're getting a huge, huge introduction to our main star, Ana de Armas. Matt, I'm going to save you for last. Adam, you coming in, you really were not looking forward to seeing her personify this role. How do you think she does here?
I think she's fine. I think there's a point where this movie flips, and I'll explain to that as soon as we get there. But all of this, and even when we see her start dancing, I'm like, that shit just goes on a little too long. Yeah, and I know we're going to get the bloody toenails because I've known dancers. Yeah, we sure as hell do. So it's just, there's nothing that's getting me really engaged or fired up or excited at this point. And this is a John Wick movie. Like, I should just be pulse exciting from credit to credit, you know, and I'm not. So just fucking get going.
I think Ana de Armas came to play. I actually really do like her in this role. I just wish she was given some, she's given some fun things to do later, and we'll talk about them when we talk about them. But I think overall, she does pretty well. I just don't think she's written that well.
I'll agree. I think she absolutely came to play, but with Stahelski directing two Keanu Reeves because of the relationship that they've had for decades, I don't think De Armas has that. She sure as hell doesn't have it with Wiseman. And I do think Stahelski tries to do it later, but she's not given the time, the effort, and the money to do the choreography and to do the prep work like Keanu is given. And she's not given a director that knows her moves in a way that complements her the way that, now look, Keanu, he needs that to be sold. She's a better actress than he is an actor, but the directing is not doing her any favors.
She looks exactly like what she is, an actress cosplaying in the action scenes. I don't think she's believable when she's doing the fight choreography. And it's not because she's a bad actress. I just don't think she was given the time or the care to really properly choreograph her fight scenes to make her distinctive from John Wick. It feels like I'm watching a cheap knockoff. And I don't get the sense, you know, Keanu Reeves trained like a Navy SEAL with all the gunplay and stuff. And even Halle Berry, I thought she, you know, she put in the work. I don't feel like De Armas did.
And I feel that dissonance when I'm watching all of her fight scenes later on.
As somebody who's watched a ton of behind the scenes of this, she did. She worked her ass off.
It doesn't show. I don't think it shows.
I agree with you. I just don't think she is given the means to actually show off what she did. But she really did work her ass off to do this film.
I also think this shows No Time to Die made the right call. You know, less is more with her. I don't think she's strong enough to carry, I say that figuratively, not literally, to like helm a movie of this scope, even with the, you know, the limitations and the, I'm sure, multiple days on set where back-to-back days you have two different people telling you what to do. I can imagine that's a challenge, but she's not Gal Gadot bad, but I don't think she's done any favors to really look as believable as she needs to or be distinctive enough. Like I said, she's just doing all of John Wick's moves, but, you know, it's not like Buddy Rogers to Ric Flair where he can carry the mantle. It's just not.
All these wrestling references. Eve's telling the director that she's ready and asking why she's been held back, and the director agrees, saying it's time. She takes Eve to the final stage of her training. Another woman walks in and says that she is Eve in 10 years. They race to load their guns as we flash to Eve as a little girl holding the gun.
I was thinking of freaking Looper. I thought this was how the movie was going to end.
Me too.
Where she gets shot, killed, and the cycle repeats.
Eve is overhearing John Wick go through his trials that we already discussed a couple podcasts ago, and here is when Eve has a confrontation with Wick himself. And, you know, I don't know if Reeves is into this version of his character, but he is about as wooden as he was during Dracula. He is awful in this movie. Every one of his scenes, his line readings, I don't know what it is about Chaz Stahelski that he can actually bring out things that make you like Keanu Reeves in this film. I don't even like him here. I think he is bad.
I agree, and I don't know which parts were reshot, because I don't think he was in this much of anything until Stahelski got involved, because I'm willing to bet Keanu forked over some money to redo some of this as well. I think both of them did. Not only is it bad, it's kind of stupid. Why the hell is he going to stop and talk to her?
Yeah.
It doesn't look good, and then it's a weird, I don't know. Like, I understand you want to insert him here into it, but let him constantly be the Baba Yaga. Let her see nothing but him walking around corners from the back. She barely gets a glimpse, you know, like of that black suit and hair disappearing around a corner. And you don't do that. You just get him with some of the worst fuck. I mean, is this Lake House bad? Yeah, maybe it is. Whoa. You know, you can go at any time.
The door's
like
right
there. This is pretty fucking bad.
And they take a shot that it was so brief of him looking to the side. It is so fucking brief. And that's what they used to say, oh yeah, that's when he spotted her and knew that she was here for the training. And oh my God, this is just... My mom did not sew as much of my costumes as they try to weave in this fucking set of scenes.
Well, inserting John Wick whatsoever betrays the essence of a spinoff, because by doing so, you are not allowing this movie to stand on its own at all. You're already including a lot of the, I mean, look, you have Winston, you have the director, you even have Sharon later on. So you're incorporating a lot of the character, the peripheral characters who are still important, but then you pull the ultimate trump card of, no, we're going to actually include John Wick himself for not just a cameo, for the catalyst for the third act of the movie. So you're already undercutting your intent of this movie from the ground up, and it's made even worse, to touch on the point that Adam said, if you kept him in the shadows, it would have made his actual appearance at the end more surprising. He literally feels like the boogeyman showing up or the Grim Reaper to go claim her soul. But because I've already had a conversation, it doesn't have the awe on her end that it should. So I think this was a huge mistake. And I bitched about the Mad Max cameo in Furiosa, but at least you don't see his face and he doesn't interact with her at all. It's just one shot to say, yep, he exists in this world. We're moving on. This was as bad as Darth Vader in Rogue One.
Oof.
I mean, he doesn't give any puns, so I guess it's better by default, but his acting is as bad as those puns.
You know the way to do this is the way, and I want to bring up another Keanu Reeves series, the way The Matrix did a video game that interacted with the two sequels that they made in 2003. They did this video game where Jada Pinkett is this character, along with this Asian guy who I don't even recognize, and you see them for brief instances in that movie. in that game, you're seeing them go through missions and actually interact with Reeves in very small doses. And he's not even existent in that except for very, very small doses. That's the way to do it. Like, why are you having this character interact? And like you said, Matt, it makes it even worse when she fights, she's just looking like a female version of John Wick. So Eve is sent to protect a powerful man's daughter and give him some weapons. So here's her first assignment.
This could have been cut.
Her first assignment?
Yeah, because I thought she was already initiated by killing the chick in the room.
Well, I'm going to say something. We've been knocking this movie left and right, which it deserves every punch that we've thrown. However, I will say this is a highlight for me. I like when she goes to minus 11. The first third of this movie, I'm finally into a scene. I think this is a great scene of her just entering this club. I like her being in communication with her superiors, and she's spotting the target. Like, this is pretty good stuff. I've been to Vegas. I know these ice bars exist, although not to this extent, but I've seen this kind of stuff, and to have a fight take place here is pretty awesome, and I do believe this is a Stahelski helm scene, and I'm having fun with it.
I'll say before this, and I forgot to say it, that showdown with them having to assemble the firearm and shoot each other,
mm-hmm.
I just got to put it out there. I actually like that scene a lot. Agreed. I thought that's how the film was going to end. But not knowing how that thing started and then having the delay before she realized what she had to do, pretty fucking kick-ass scene. When we get here, I'm a little put off that she's got to use rubber bullets. I'm thinking, was this film originally kind of like Megan? You know how those films are known for being R, but their theater releases are PG-13. And I'm wondering if initially that was part of the thought behind this. Because I don't know what or why, unless this is all a setup and everybody here is just trainees under the director. But it's fine, but it takes me a moment to realize she's not great yet. This is still training. This is still her first mission. And when I'm there, I'm like, okay, I'm okay with her kind of giving back and forth and getting her ass kicked as well, because I do think it fits, because I think we see her grow. It's fun. I don't think it holds a candle to the club scenes we've seen before, either in John Wick 1 or 2 or 3 or 4, but you kind of got to have a club scene with some good music, and I think it does that. And though I got to say, if you're going to dress her up and she's going to freaking look like she stepped out of a Resident Evil game with that fucking red dress, at least make it obvious. Jesus Christ.
And pulling music for the intros and outros to this, I was on the YouTube channel that this composer is on, and when I was grabbing a song from it, I saw there was a little bit of an interaction he had with somebody who had said, so this is the scene when she walks in the club, right? And he responded with, yep, in order to do that, I had to watch Ana de Armas enter this club over and over, and I was not complaining. Which I thought was actually pretty glorious. Matt, how are you feeling about this scene?
It's okay. I'm not blown away by anything up to this point. And I have to watch another freaking club scene. Are there no other places you could do escort missions besides nightclubs?
But at the same time, we've been mentioning that this is not really distinguishing itself as a John Wick film. But here we actually are seeing that. This is your through line. It's a club scene that ends in a fight.
Yeah, but if you're a spinoff, stand on your own 2 feet. Although that line does not permeate this movie whatsoever. Like, to me, this is the wrong... It's well-intentioned, but I think it is also a misguided spinoff in a lot of ways.
So Eve grabs a pickaxe and just goes to town, and she eventually grabs the girl and leaves. She's then branded, and we cut to 2 months later when she has a shard of glass stuck on her shoulder, and there's a dead guy in the corner who she takes a picture of. What a jump here. And I will say, when it comes to the directing of this, I think the scene in the club distinguishes itself. Yes, this is a John Wick film. And I'm feeling that because of the changes of colors and the palette and everything else. After this scene in the club, this film is pretty blandly directed. And one thing we have always said, even with that first film that had a minuscule budget, well, a budget of about 30, was it was beautiful to look at. It always distinguished itself. From this point on, guys, it just becomes a standard action film.
I think this is when the film finally engages me. Her leaving this club, and we basically get to watch in reverse seeing the wrath that she just brought into this place. I think this is a really cool, different type of thing. We see her going back through all these different rooms and hallways, picking her knives back out of everybody that she's killed. It's like watching it in reverse, what John would have done. And I fucking dig this. It's a cool little just juxtaposition. It changes up a little bit. I like this. And I feel instantly, even though we just watched her 30 seconds ago in the club, I actually feel like she has changed between that and this. even though it's just now. I feel like the first third half of this film, up until this point, I feel like is a different movie from this one. I feel like at least now we're like, okay, we're going to go just have some fun and be kind of a crazy action film.
But do you feel from this point on it that the style is standard and not what we're used to when it comes to John Wick?
I feel it's a different style than John Wick, but I think from here on out, it's the style that this movie has.
This makes me wish the whole movie was just her as a contract killer, not an actual like purposeful revenge mission that it turns into. Because this is when I find her the most believable, of just doing assignments. You know, if you were going to rip something off, this was kind of setting up La Femme Nikita, where she's a professional assassin, and you kind of go the Luc Besson angle. But also this trick kind of reminds me of what they do with The Equalizer with Denzel, where like he times his watch, plans it out in his head. He's basically Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock Holmes.
Yep.
It's okay, but I feel like I'm watching a bunch of different movies meshed together. Like this thing has more stitches in it than Frankenstein.
Eve goes in the elevator and then into the street as she pulls away from a body and drives off into a very fake-looking car scene as she's hit and dragged forward.
Oh, this alley looks so artificial. Like, yeah. I have expect Thomas and Martha Wayne to get shot right next door.
I'm glad you said it. I was convinced that everything in here is completely fake. You know what's crazy? Because I saw it. This is done practically, and it looks like it's a fucking PlayStation 3 game. This looks really bad, really rubbery, and they actually fucking did this on two cars on wires, smashing into each other and pulling it all the way back down into the camera, which is a cool effect, but I don't know how you do it practically and make it look like you're just, oh, goddamn, fucking Blade 2.
Eve gets out and fights the driver as she breaks his arm and rams him into a car window before stabbing him. She then sees the symbol on his wrist.
All right. This movie has terrible storytelling because all of her investigation, her successes are entirely because of coincidence and other people telling her shit. She doesn't earn much of anything. And that kind of betrays the whole, you know, strong female character mantra when everything is handed to her on a silver platter and is a cataclysm of cascading coincidences. How's that for alliteration?
Nice.
That would make Frank Gorshin blush. Burgess Meredith Penguin. He spoke in alliteration. And I have a huge problem with that. All of her successes are attributed to either dumb luck or other people telling her exactly what she needs to hear at precisely the right time.
I just don't know why we have an entire cult full of straight edge members, because that's all I get with this fucking X on the wrist. How lazy are you that this is the design you came up with, man? Yeah. In a world full of cool ass tattoo artists and scarification techniques, this is what we get, bro.
So Eve's told that something's leaking from her bag as she drops the hand on the director's desk. She asks the director why she didn't tell Eve who these people are, and she's told that when you deal in blood, there must be rules.
I love her showing back up to the director, though, and just dropping this hand on the desk. This is one of the only scenes between these two that I believe and I enjoy.
Yeah, there's another scene later on that I laughed at, but this movie needed to be... All these Wick movies, as good as they've been, and there have been instances of dry humor, and I haven't really seen that in a while, and seeing this and a scene later on, I was laughing. So the director warns Eve to not pursue this, and then Eve tells her, "Yes, mother." Eve goes to the Continental and runs into Sharon and then asks to speak to the manager. I did not think that I would see Lance Reddick here. I thought we saw him for the final time in John Wick 4. I'm not complaining, although I wish I got more of him.
I mean, if you're going to have him, if you're going to go to the Continental, it'd be odd if he wasn't there. Thankfully, he shot this before he passed, so you didn't have to do the... You didn't have to Grand Moff Tarkin him, thankfully.
Good to see him here. Made me sad. I had no idea he was in this. So it's one of those where I smile and then immediately I'm like, oh, man. But it was a nice little surprise.
Eve says that she's looking for the tribe who killed her father. And he tells her that it might not be in her best nature to know what she wants to know. She sets a coin on the table and says, please. He then tells her that it's not a tribe, but a cult who kills for sport. Their precise location is unknown, but she needs to find a man named Daniel Pine, and he's known to have a sweet tooth. She goes and checks into 314 as we see that she's being watched, and we're seeing that Daniel Pine is also being watched as Eve is spotted entering his room. She's approached by a child and reprimanded for saying shit, and then asked if she's going to hurt her father. We hear a gun cock in the background, and there's Norman Reedus in a role that I swore was another one. You get this guy. He looks like he walked right off Death Stranding 2. And Daryl Dixon, right into this set. He looks like he never leaves the set. He's only here for like a couple scenes. My God, he's third fucking billed on the poster. Why bring him here if this is all he's going to be?
This felt like borderline just stunt casting.
Yes.
And I feel like these movies were always above that, where I feel like they always got people who fit this world. He sticks out like a sore thumb, which he probably gets from shooting that crossbow every take on The Walking Dead.
I wasn't expecting this. I don't think I remembered that he was in this from seeing a trailer or anything. So I was like, oh, shit. Reedus, okay. I guess he's going to be along with her for the rest of this journey. So this is... there's a lot of shit you can cut out of this movie, and this is another one that's, you could find a way to do this better.
One of the tropes I hate the most are hit people who are forced to protect or go after kids who are kidnapped or targets. I mean, this thing's been done to death in assassin movies alone. Hell, they did it in Elektra, for God's sake.
Oof. Another one
we're never finished it. I do like, though, that this, you know, it holds true that, hey, you can just live in the Continental. And there's nothing anybody can really do about it.
Yeah, I mean, he might as well pull a Lethal Weapon 2 and just yell, diplomatic immunity.
Because he's being surrounded, right? Like, everybody's surrounding this room. And they're just waiting for him to leave. But he's not going to leave. He's just going to stay here. And as long as he's here, he's safe. So bizarre.
I mean, if you want him to leave, cut his plumbing lines to his bathroom.
Eve's asking Pine about the cult that he was in before. Pine's contract is requested to be doubled. And he blames Eve for that happening. He says that they want him dead to get to his daughter as shots ring out. Eve and Pine, they make their way out. And again, these scenes are just shot so boringly. There's no style whatsoever. Just pretty bland stuff here.
I got a problem too with just because you upped the bounty, suddenly it was okay to go after him. I mean, the people that wanted him were from, you know, this cult. I mean, they own a town. Money's not an issue, you know, especially for the main woman that we see here in this lobby. So what and why would push you over that edge? It doesn't matter. You know, all of you are going to risk death. I get it in the first John Wick. It makes sense and it establishes that rule. But to break the rule here is just kind of lazy.
And they're breaking protocol for a cult that is not on good terms with the Continental or the ruling body or whatever the hell you want to call this world. So the fact that they're focused on the material aspect of money for a cult that clearly doesn't need it makes no sense.
Pine says that in a cult, no one ever gets out and that his daughter deserves a better life than this. He says if he helps protect her, he'll help her find a way out. He then tells his daughter that she can trust Eve. I find it shocking that they don't kill him.
Word, reshoots.
Yeah. They walk through a crowd and he fires a shot in the air as the two girls run off. Eve is then blocked in the head.
The most realistic thing in this movie. Somebody fires a shot into the air and people run.
Yes. Eve looks up and sees a woman walking away and then falls right back down. We cut back to the Chancellor, who's told they got her and there was another woman there. We then cut back to Eve, who says that she didn't break any rules and kill anyone, as everyone else is killed but her, and then told to check out. She goes to Frank, who asks permission to be Frank. A line I have to say me and Jen laughed at for about 5 minutes. Because we cut to him, and the name tag on his freaking shirt says Frank.
I agree. Frank cracked me up. And what we needed something to kind of break it up a little bit. This is perfect.
Eve's then given carte blanche at a very divergent arsenal. This is when we have the equip scene.
Mm-hmm. Check that box.
Yeah, exactly. As it's going on, they're attacked. And she takes out a guy before running off. She makes her way up the stairs as a box of grenades fall. And there is a stinging of the ears that you would feel. So I have to give the sound guys credit on that. Of course, she'd be deaf after this, but still.
Oh, yeah, but this is my favorite part of the movie because this becomes Friday the 13th level of creativity with killing people through grenades.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's here or later on in the movie, but when she throws a grenade at a guy and slams the door shut...
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was actually, if they kind of made this just a dumb slasher movie for the action scenes, I kind of would have given it a little bit more, I would have had more fun with it.
So this is probably my favorite scene in the movie up to this point.
And am I going, hey, that's not how that goes, or I hope she's wearing ear protection? How is there no concussive effects going on with these grenades? I am for the first, I don't know, four times she uses it, but then it keeps fucking going. And it is so like, I'm in a theater. Again, there's only six of us in there, maybe seven at this point. And every time, all of us are yelling out, oh, shit. It's just, it keeps kind of escalating and escalating. She throws a grenade. She throws another grenade, puts one in his hand, puts the guy behind the door, flips a table over. And you just see viscera fucking dripping everywhere. I mean, she's perfectly clean because of course she is. But this is fucking fun. It makes no sense, but goddamn, this is fun. She is with grenades what Wick is with firearms.
So she gets in a one-on-one fight, and as Matt mentioned, slams a guy in a closet as she goes to one locked door and takes a guy out using a belt and a grenade. Frank says, motherfuckers, as he tells her that they are deep in the mountains, and Eve apologizes for his shop and then proceeds to ask for a car. He cut to Eve driving in the snowy Alps as the director calls. She says that Eve defied her orders and engaged with them and insists that she turn around, but Eve just hangs up.
Speaking of Resident Evil, the rest of this movie is her fighting Los Illuminados.
Oh, boy. She walks into a shop and finds the snow globe from earlier and then asks for a coffee. Someone then walks into the shop and opens fire on her, and this chick just cannot buy a break. Everywhere she goes, somebody's after her ass.
All right, well, this is also where I break from any degree of reality, because this world, or this cult, is made up entirely of retired assassins. Okay, that's stupid, but I'll go with it. But there are way too many women assassins compared to what we've seen collectively in the other John Wick films for me to believe this.
Yeah. The fight goes all around the shop until she breaks this guy's arm, Steven Seagal style, and makes her way up the stairs. She tells the coffee girl that she's not going to hurt her, and then the coffee girl goes after her as well. They're hitting each other with plates.
I like this. Like, you think it's just because you see people leave this restaurant, bar, coffee, whatever it is, you know, walk out. So you think that they know something's up, so they're leaving to give them room to fight. No, uh-uh. They come back, and you're realizing it's this whole fucking town.
She locks this chick in the cooler, and more guys make their way in, and more fighting ensues before she just shoots down the coffee chick. Clock chimes are hit, and they engage her. She's shot at as she runs up the steps to a house, and we have some good shots here. And then a woman approaches Eve, sees the tattoo on her back, and knocks her to the ground.
I do, though. This is when I have a problem during this fight. There's some really cool stuff. I like the camera movement, but there are way too many times, especially when they're using knives or axes or some of the other stuff in the room, where it's sped up. And this is when it's obvious that they speed up a frame to try to make these shots look kinetic and powerful. And it immediately rips me out.
The Chancellor approaches the little girl from earlier and tells her that her father broke all customs. And she tells the Chancellor that she hates him. And he says that hate will make you strong. Right, Palpatine?
Oh my God. Between that and the Chancellor name, yes. Why was this not Eve McDermott?
He's then told that they got Eve and that she has the mark. And then we get a Bond villain type pontificating as the hero is tied up. And he asks her why she's here. The Chancellor figures out that this is about vengeance and says that fate is a very humbling thing. He then tells Eve's sister who she really is as shots ring out, and then Lena aligns herself with Eve.
That was quick.
I didn't think the sister was going to show up. I thought we were going to find out the mother was still here the whole time.
I thought that too. That, yeah.
You know, that the father had taken them away, but the mother had, you know, I thought we were going to get sisters, but that's because the mother kept breeding. For it to be the sister, I'm okay with it. And I think this actress does a decent job. I kind of wish maybe we had her stalking Anna through this entire film and then we got a reveal. But this is goddamn fucking Star Wars. This is Anakin Skywalker quick of falling to the dark side of Lena kind of being like, okay, I'll join you.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing this
is freaking Yelena and Black Widow.
You guys keep mentioning that movie. I haven't seen it yet.
It's only been out 5 years on Disney Plus.
I've been waiting for us to review it. We're going to be seeing this chick again in a retrospective or two, so keep your eyes on her, this Lena chick. You know what I thought they were going to go? I thought this sister was going to be a part of the cult, you know, and we'd get that fucking trope. Fortunately, they don't go there.
She is, though.
But she is part of the...
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the Ruska Roma and that she was hiding.
Oh, like she was a mole?
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to see the two of them literally team up, fucking player one, player two.
Yeah, I feel like that was the plan until they realized, oh shit, this movie's falling apart. Called Keanu last minute. Keanu. Break glass in case of emergency, because he fucking shows up. They might as well have had Stone Cold Steve Austin's music playing when he walks out of that fucking bus.
Jesus Christ. Lena then tells Eve that she thought she was dead, and Lena tells her who she really is. They get in an argument over whose choices were worse, and here, there are no more lies. A sniper scope is focused on them as the Chancellor says to take them both out. Grenades also make their way in, and the reunion is short-lived. Eve takes out some guys in the fire using a fire poker, amongst other things. I love that. Before she falls crying.
This is the quickest... the Chancellor's just like, what is she doing? She's with her. What are they doing? They're talking. Ah, fuck it. Kill her, too. This is so lazy.
And oh, yeah, because he goes to DEFCON 10 real quick.
You could tell it wasn't planned, and it's ADR bullshit. It's just like, what the fuck? Why even have that reveal just to kill her off 30 seconds later?
Yeah, why have this reunion if she's just going to die 5 seconds later, exactly? So she overhears a radio message, and she picks up saying that this isn't done until you're dead before hanging up. The Chancellor calls the director and says you will accept full consequences of your actions, and the director says that she's acting against orders, and she cannot call her off if she tried, but... she can send someone capable of ending things. I wonder who this is, guys.
Should have been John Leguizamo.
This becomes very problematic for me because I'm trying to enjoy this movie. And once we get that scene where, you know, she leaves the club and she's a full-blown Rosso Roma, whatever, you know, I'm enjoying this film a whole lot more. But I know where this film takes place. I know that Giovanni's ticket is torn. So I don't know how, why, or in what way the director is now going to call him for a favor when he's basically now excommunicated from the Rusca Roma as well. Like, this does not play.
You know why? Because they were desperate to get
it. No, you know why? Because they cut it out.
They broke continuity.
Yeah.
They have a scene, because it's online, that explains it. And it belongs. I don't need this film any longer, but it explains it, and it actually helps me on John Wick 4. And they fucking cut it out of this film.
Elaborate, because I don't know what that scene is.
Yeah.
So we get it in John Wick 4. He shows up and he's in Japan, right? He shows up at the Osaka Continental. So what we get is his boat trip to Japan, and the captain comes in and explains that you have a phone call, and she basically tells him, I need your help, and in exchange, I will help you get assistance at the Osaka Continental.
I don't understand why you would cut that. It's a two-minute scene.
Yeah, it is really quick, but it kind of helps to explain for those that have been steeped in this lore of how it could actually fit. Because without it, you kind of cut off your own continuity.
So they have Angelica Houston in that scene that was just cut out of this movie?
Yeah, see, I think they use B-roll and then have a voice over it.
Okay. So we hear the Chancellor give orders to lead the wolf to its prey. John Wick walks amongst the snow and approaches Eve, saying that he can kill her or she can leave. She asks if he remembers her and what he said to her, which was that she could leave and it's her choice. She says she's decided that she's not going to leave and she opens fire. He says he doesn't have to do this as they start fighting. He pulls a gun on her and tells her to go. She responds with, he killed her father. And Reeve, again, gives just a pitiful reading. I know.
My name is Inigo Montoya. He killed my father. Prepare to die.
Wick tells her that if she's not done by midnight, then rules and consequences will apply. So they fight here, and then he's like, all right, I'll give you till midnight. What the fuck?
The only compliment I will give this is that if she beat him, I would have walked out of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Matt. I do like that she keeps getting her ass kicked. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I mean that in the best way. I'm okay with that because I do like that whole, to go to the Captain Marvel kind of thing, you know, fight like a girl, continue to stand.
Eve takes out a guard in a sniper position and hangs him off a balcony as the Chancellor calls for the citizen to be hunted by every outsider. She gets in a fight with a guy with a knife, and she finally gets her hands on a gun. More guys attack, and she goes back inside and finds a flamethrower. The Chancellor tells his lead officer to find her and destroy her before she finds him. The guards approach as another grenade goes off on some steps, and then the flames start. And you know what, guys? I have to say, much like Matt had a thing for the final 20 minutes of Mission Impossible 2, I'm sad to admit, I absolutely love everything that has to do with these flamethrowers. I think this is badass.
I would have liked it if John Wick 4 hadn't just done it.
They didn't do a scene like this, did they?
Yeah, but they used the dragon shotgun that had the flame rounds.
Oh, yeah, but that was like overhead, though.
Yeah, that was actually good. This is stupid because nobody shoots the tanks.
You can't even let me have this fucking 10 minutes of joy, really?
Oh, it's stupid trash, but I'm not... I take it out because nobody... This is the contrived part where nobody remembers how to aim, even though this is a community of assassins.
How do you aim a flamethrower, though?
Oh, I'm talking about the people shooting at her.
Okay.
Where she is a literal walking target. Those tanks are huge. And nobody can fucking hit it.
When I saw this in the trailer, I was like, ugh, fucking flamethrowers. Is that where we are? How exciting can this be? I'm kind of happy to say this is pretty fucking exhilarating. And I can't believe that this cotton candy is making me smile, but it is so stupid over the topness that I'm just like, fuck it, okay, go, because they shoot like guns almost, you know, they do it in bursts. Fucking A, like, this is it's a take, it's something different. Fucking grenades and flamethrowers. She's growing on me by the end of this film.
And it's very easy to spot CGI fire. So I was looking really hard for that in my second watch of this, but I have to say, a lot of this looks very practical. These stunts are very dangerous, and Ana de Armas herself was actually crying when she was done, because at one point she did light a guy on fire, and he was on fire for like 2 minutes, and she felt really, really bad about the entire thing, but goddamn, this is just fun stuff for me.
Yeah, you normally got, I think it's like a 48, 50 second max before they have to be doused, and you have one where the guy's crawling away, and she keeps hitting him, and that's practical, and it's impressive. Like, it looks for a lot of this film, which I'm sorry, doesn't look very good, everything they do here at the fire looks pretty awesome.
It's a race against time as guards approach, as does Midnight, but she unleashes on all these guys in the streets, and the Chancellor pulls a Tarkin and refuses to leave his post even when he's told that they've lost track of John Wick.
This is where you need your Gary Oldman professional everyone type of moment.
Yes.
But he's so fucking boring and disinterested in the entire movie.
I know.
He never brings it. Like, he never changes his performance whatsoever.
No, he's got one speed in this. More flames are unleashed as...
Yeah, and it's cruise control.
More flames are unleashed as Eve grabs a fire hose and counters it. Again, just guilty pleasure stuff. This water against fire, it's stupid as all hell, but I'm having fun.
Oh, yeah, this is right out of X-Men 3.
I do like the overhead shot as the hose wins and the guy is blown up from behind. He's on top with a sniper rifle and is then found, so Wick has to fight his way out of this. And after all the fighting, the Chancellor approaches Eve, saying whatever happens here is not going to change anything, as the system will continue as it has. She was chosen as a killer. It is her fate. So at this point, she takes out a gun and shoots the Chancellor in the head.
Which is, I mean, it's a little callback kind of that to that first John Wick film. You know, where your villain is pontificating and you're just going to end it by shooting him in the head. And I guess if Wick was going to kill the flamethrower guy for her, at least she got this, you know, she got her catharsis moment.
Well, it's also the second one of, oh, you think you have principles? No, I'm still going to shoot you.
Wick calls the director and says that she's not dead, but he is. Director says fine and hangs up. Pine's daughter goes to Pine and wakes him up before he invites her up, because of course, Reedus cannot leave the set. Meanwhile,
because they came back and was like, wait, we have someone in case this does well.
Meanwhile, Winston asks Eve if all went well and then tells her that she may have cut off the snake's head, but the body will continue looking for her. And then he wishes her luck. She heads to a dance as her name is put through the ringer and the price on her head goes up and up. She walks down and out of the auditorium as credits roll on Ballerina. Adam, how do we feel about the end here?
I think it works out okay. I mean, it's you know, what do you do? They're building a universe. And even if it's not going to continue this, I think they want to make it clear that they can do other characters. So that's what they're leading towards. I'm okay with it.
Well, it's clear they want this to be a series with another dilemma. But the problem is, it's the same conceit that we've seen a previous John Wick installment end on, with a price being put on her head. Even her resolution is unoriginal.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 10... what do we give Ballerina? Adam, go ahead, sir.
For a film that initially, when it was first announced, I was rolling my eyes at. When I saw the first bits of trailer and info, I was like, okay, you know what? I can get back in this world and have fun. And then as it got closer to it, I was like, just kind of ho-hum. I wasn't in a hurry. And I think that's how a lot of people felt about this. You know, I think the year delay to try to fix this film hurt this film dramatically. And I'm sorry, I'm going to go back to what I say a lot. Thank you, James Gunn, for agreeing with me. Don't film a fucking movie without a script that you're happy with. I don't care if it's an action movie. I don't care if it's a drama. Because you reshoot a movie, it gets stitched together, you waste money, and you get an inconsistent vision, which is what we get here. We don't know whose film this is. Is it Stahelski? Is it Len Wiseman? Who knows? It's clearly a little bit of both. And by mixing the two flavors together, you're not getting two great things that come together. You're getting a hodgepodge of meh throughout. I don't care about the opening and her father. I just don't. This turns into a standard revenge film that we've seen over and over. And we have a revenge film with John Wick, so this needed to be something different. It gets pretty cool in the middle when she's a contract killer. She's an assassin. I like that. Delve into that world and maybe let her cross the wrong person, you know, and go off that way. The action, some of it's good, some of it's not. The acting, some of it's good, some of it's not. The cinematography, the photography, the sets, some of them are good, some of them are not. And that's kind of how this entire film is. There's good moments, there's bad moments, and because of that, it is inconsistent from credit to credit, and it's a shame. It's not bad, but it sure as hell isn't good. And that's kind of where I'm going to land on it. If you want an action film that's enjoyable, female-led, you can do dramatically better, but you can also do a hell of a lot worse, you know, because there's some fun parts in this, I think mostly the second half. So I'm going to give this a 6. It's watchable, but it's a huge step down from any of the Wick films. And if they continue it on, they really need to sharpen the knives before they decide to pull them back out.
Wow. 6 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, you've been holding your gun at your holster this entire time. Go ahead and unleash, sir.
This is the Diet Coke of John Wick, where I do enjoy it, but I need it with ice. I don't want to drink it at room temperature. I kind of need to dilute it in order to properly enjoy it. And I feel like this thing is diluted from what the franchise has done consistently. That doesn't mean it's terrible, because this is not a terrible movie by any means. My expectations, I think, were warranted because this franchise has set a remarkably high bar. And just because you're a spinoff does not give you the right to coast on what's come before it. I think it is your responsibility, especially when you pull getting Keanu back, for me to expect that same metric of quality. And I don't think that's here. But there are parts of this I really enjoy, and this is a classic example of the parts are greater than the sum of the whole. I can watch parts of this. I'd be very curious to see what this would have been with a full 100% Stahelski-directed movie, or even a Len Wiseman, just so I could feel like I'm watching a collective piece. That's not what I have. This definitely feels like a hodgepodge, but it could have been a lot worse. I mean, this isn't a total Justice League situation, because Keanu Reeves didn't show up without a beard. Or a CGI beard, that would have really taken me out. I'm going to give it the same score as Adam, though. I'm going to give it a 6. It's okay. I didn't hate it, but I think it is a substantial step down for this errant franchise.
2 6s. Well, this might as well be Gabriel Byrne's End of Days, because I'm going to pull a Satan here and add another 6 to that. That's my score as well. My reasons for it are pretty much what you guys have outlined. There are things about this movie I really like. There are 2 scenes of this movie that I love. I love the club scene and I love the flamethrowers. However, this movie is so standard. And when I think of John Wick, I don't think of standard. I think of a lot of care being put in every single shot. And the 3 of us have outlined in those previous films. Those films look literally like graphic novels come to life. I'm not getting that here. This is something that I would see Brett Ratner do, or any action director come out and shit out a fucking action film. That's not this series. And when I came out of this theater, Jen went and used the bathroom. And at this point, only Matt had seen it between the 3 of us. And I sent Matt a text. I said, what the fuck did I just watch? In watching it again, the fun scenes were still fun, but the bad was really highlighted for me, more so on the second viewing than the first. But for those fun scenes, man, there are things that, yes, we have seen those club scenes before, but I don't care. I had fun with that. And that flamethrower at the end, seeing that chick just roast these guys was fun for me. It's so fucking surface level, but I still got some enjoyment out of it. Still, we're bogged down by a very bored-looking Gabriel Byrne, very cliched plot, And while Ana de Armas, I liked her more than I think the other two on this podcast, I don't think that she was right for this. So on that scale, I will go ahead and give it a 6 as well. I had enough fun with this. All right, that's John Wick. Let's rate these films. And I am curious to know both of your scores. Adam, how do you rate John Wick, sir? The series from your favorite to your least.
This was hard because there's so many that it really depends on the kind of film that I want to watch and the time that I have. I mean, that makes a difference. But when I look at them all, John Wick Chapter 2 is my favorite John Wick film. I absolutely fucking love that. Just after that, man, this is hard. I'm going to go Chapter 4. It's long, but it is rare that I have a theater experience as enjoyable and palpable as that was for me. And then I have John Wick, and it's tough because those three are neck and neck and neck, and they can change at any moment. Remember that when we discuss Marvel in 10 years. Yeah, absolutely. And then it's a pretty sizable step down, but I'm going to give it to Chapter 3, Parabellum, and then Ballerina. And even those two are neck and neck for me. I don't think any of them are crap. You know, even Ballerina, it's got some moments that I don't like, but it's enjoyable. Chapter 3, we discussed, has a lot of moments I don't like, but I can still enjoy a good part of it as well. So 2, 4, 1, 3, Ballerina.
All right. Goudreau, I have a feeling that yours is a different list.
Yeah, but mine's really easy to do. So start from the top, work my way down. John Wick 4, John Wick 3, John Wick 2, John Wick 1, Ballerina. I think the John Wick franchise is a rarity where I believe they get better with every installment. And that's high praise considering the first one's an 8 for me. So don't think I'm slighting the OG with my standings, but it's a real rarity for me. And I think a rarity for action franchises. You know, we talked about how Lethal Weapon kind of, you know, started out strong and petered out. This does the opposite for me, where it starts out strong and keeps getting better until this one.
I was going to say, it keeps getting better to this climax, yeah, huh?
But this is also a spinoff, so it's not a hard rule. But look, a 6 isn't... When a 6 is the lowest score for an installment, that's pretty damn good in my book.
Wow, mine's completely different than both of yours. My number one...
Good, because we had too much agreement.
I was going to say, after Mission Impossible, I'm happy for this. My number one is number one. I really enjoyed rewatching John Wick as an action film, as something that, as I've mentioned, every single frame looked like so much care was put behind it. And you have Keanu Reeves actually doing something that he is very good at, which is minimal talking, lots of action. And man, did he come to play for that. My second is number 4. I had a lot of fun with number 4, as we mentioned. Yeah, it's a tad too long, but my God, a lot of graphic novels are also too long. My number 3 is Parabellum. John Wick Chapter 3. It pulls off the rarity of me liking Halle Berry. I enjoyed her in that movie. I enjoyed John Wick in that movie. I enjoyed all the trials and tribulations that he did in that movie. I think 3 and 4 are neck and neck for me. They're both epics and they both really work for me. Then we get to my bottom 2. I am notoriously very down on Part 2. And Ballerina didn't exactly set the world on fire, despite Ana de Armas being armed with a flamethrower for the final quarter of it. However, my score is Ballerina is the next one because of those two scenes that I've outlined. And number 2 is the bottom for me. I did not have any fun whatsoever with that film. So it is the exact polar opposite of Adam, where Adam had it as number 1. It's my 5th. I did not have fun with Chapter 2. And that was my surprise coming back to this series, boys, is I remember loving this series. I remember really enjoying every single film of it. And rewatching it, it's not as good as I remembered. And that was surprising for me. I remember even thinking that number 4 was like a perfect score. It's not. None of these are perfect scores. The closest to me is number 1 just because of how authentic it felt to me. Matt, were you surprised at how much you liked this series?
No. Well, if you would have asked me 10 years ago that a Keanu Reeves franchise would set the bar for action for me, I would have laughed at your face and told you to eat shit. So color me surprised in that regard. And I think this is the standard bearer for action cinema for the last decade. It used to be Mission Impossible until that last piece of shit that broke my heart.
So, I was gonna say,
I hope this franchise does not wear out its welcome though and do another movie that is as bad as Final Reckoning. That would just break my heart.
Adam, were you surprised at how much you liked or disliked this series going back to it?
No. because to me, much like when Matt said he felt like all these kept growing and getting better, that's kind of how I felt in watching them. So this is one of the ones where when was told that we were doing this, I was really looking forward to it. And I had hoped they had all held up as well as I remembered, and they sure as hell did, and some of them even got better. To Matt's point, I think this is kind of a, I think this has planted its flag as a standard bearer for action in the last decade, and I hope they don't sully themselves by putting out more like this. I hope they find a way and take the time to make it worth coming back to the Wickiverse.
All right, before I get to our next series, Matt, I have to ask you, do you still believe that the Donnie Yen spinoff Kane movie is happening?
Not after this. This is a bomb. This is a bomb in every essence. You can't sugarcoat it. You can't dance around. Ballerina, you can't dance around it. And I think that if it doesn't get made, if it gets made at bare minimum, they're not going to rush it. Maybe it takes 2 years for it to actually get a director.
And the Shea Hatton, let's bring some new blood like they did with Colstead. Let's bring someone else in or someone with a fresh take, because the way they've built this universe around that spec script that he wrote all those years ago, this is the final nail in the coffin for me. Let's move on to someone else. Hell, bring David Leitch back, for Christ's sake. Bring somebody here to inject some life in, because Ballerina, as much as I like portions of it, just did not end the series on a good note. Will the next series end on a good note? Coming up next, boys, we are going back to a series we covered a couple years ago. We promised people that we were going to do the rest of it. People even posted in some reviews saying, you guys just do series and drop them. When are you going back? And mentioned this series as an example. It was always in the cards. We were going to do it a couple years ago in the lead up to the previous film, but that kind of fell by the wayside when other things came up. Now we are finally going to do it. After doing Jurassic Park a couple years ago, we're going to move on to Jurassic World, which is a series that's going to end on a review of Jurassic World Rebirth with Scarlett Johansson and a whole bunch of other Marvel would-bes. Matt, this is two series in a row that have kind of ended on a down note. Is there any way possible Jurassic World can end better?
When pigs fly, to be honest, but... Yeah. If you listen, that is the sound of one hand clapping, which mirrors my excitement for watching these movies again.
I remember giving one of the next series of films a decent review when I was leading up to a review of Fallen Kingdom, but I gotta be honest, I don't remember them that well. And by the way, two of them are going to be first time watches for me. One is, yes, Rebirth, but I still haven't seen Dominion, so I don't know what the hell those last two films are going to bring. Adam, how do you feel going into Jurassic World?
So I already feel deja vu, because I have asked these guys half a dozen times over since we started discussing this. Didn't we do this? No, Adam, we didn't. Are you sure we didn't do this? No, Adam, we didn't. I swear I went and saw this just so that we could discuss. No, we never did. So if somebody could figure out where the hell I discussed Fallen Kingdom and Dominion, please let me know, because I can't remember. But I'm looking forward to it. I've seen at least one film in this series, in this second part of the series, a number of times. Other ones I haven't. And I think for the last couple of series, for us being in lockstep a little bit and us being a little too agreeable, I think that's about to be stomped on like a T-Rex. I think there's about to be some fighty-fighty when it comes to the world of dinosaurs for Jurassic World.
Going back to the beard, and it won't be the last time we go back to the beard throughout the course of this year. I'm actually looking forward to doing that series as well, and I'm looking forward to revisiting those, because I remember, again, being on a teeter-totter about whether I liked them or not. So that'll be interesting. There are so many things coming up, but until next week, when we get to Jurassic World, podcasts don't fly. Thank you, boys.
So, you want to kill him? You want to kill him? I want to kill him.
What about you, Mr. Big?
I'm going to kill you.
Oh, for better, of course, yeah. But it looks like we have ourselves a genuine conundrum.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Just have fun, Albert.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
What have you done? Finished it.
Check out the Percolated Media Archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series, Lethal Weapon series, the Alien franchise,
the Mad Max movies, Avatar,
Mission Impossible film series,
Jurassic Park, and so many more.
A man can stay here a long time and never eat the same meal twice.
Good day to you both.
3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Well, sometimes you gotta cut a motherfucker.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I have enjoyed his company.
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Consider this a professional courtesy.
Scheduling done by Matt.
He's coming again.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Jonathan, just walk away.
Yeah, Jonathan, walk away.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
John Wick is a man of focus.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
He's excommunicado.
Unless you wish to become the same, I suggest you lower your guard.
We gotta go.
Ah!
Now.
Because if you thought the Daniel Craig controversy was one thing, wait until they cast a black guy as James Bond.
You ain't kidding.
All right, I got
this. All right, well, speaking of movies with no black people, let's talk about Ballerina.
It's got one.
Lance Reddick, that's it.
Yeah.
It's like pulling just a mid-card, you know, wrestler and decided that they're going to headline maybe not WrestleMania, but Royal Rumble. You know, it's like, oof, you know what? No, you need to be in the big match, not the main event.
She's the hardcore Holly of, of action stars, where we're going to have him in a world title match against Brock Lesnar on the Royal Rumble, because that's not the headliner.
Oh, there's my text. the Undertaker gong is my text message thing. I picked her up. We got out there an hour early, so we went to BJ's right before.
It's what I like before a movie too.
Right. And then we went. We then see the entrance of Gabriel Byrne, an actor I hadn't seen in so long. I thought he was dead.
I had no clue he was in this.
I didn't either.
I don't think he knew either, because he looks like he's on Prozac or something.
I know.
Throughout this entire movie.
He does. I don't think I've seen him since The Usual Suspects, for Christ's sake. Oh no, he was in that dumb Arnold End of Days film.
Well, the last thing I remember him in was Hereditary.
Oh, that's right. He was in that. Yeah.
And one day we'll review him in The Mouth of Madness.
No, we won't.
There you go. There's your obligatory comment to beat you to it.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Oblivion. He says they allowed it.
At least Houston was a professional. It looks like she actually wants to be there.
I agree. The director says
this
that
is
she...
where.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, you know what? No, I'll save it.
Okay.
Sorry.
The director says.
To me, this is the wrong. It's well-intentioned, but I think it is also a misguided spinoff in a lot of ways.
This is when we needed Kevin Nash standing outside being a bouncer for this club.
For fuck's sake.
That's the tie-in we needed.
Well, it would have been Kai and Tai, because she's fighting Asians.
So, Frank says, motherfuckers, as he tells her that they are deep in the mountains, and Eve apologizes for his shop, and then proceeds to ask for a car. Boy, a typical woman, right, Adam?
Yours. Not you, Jen. Love you.
We cut it.
We don't know whose film this is. Is it Stahelski? Is it, you know, is it, what's his fuck? Len Wiseman? Who knows?
Wow. 6 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, you've been holding your gun at your holster this entire time. Go ahead and unleash, sir.
Sorry, I got distracted. This will be a blooper. Sauce Gardner just got paid.
Oh, did he?
Damn, good.
Highest paid corner in NFL history.
Wow, let's hope he doesn't get injured.
Him and Garrett, though, both 4-year extensions.
Wow.
They may be making, you know, 3 years out, they may be in good shape.
Clearly, Aaron Glenn, they like him, or they just like the paycheck.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the zeros kind of had
to do with that. Those are two guys, like, if they wanted to leave, I wouldn't blame them. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, this is the